Hey everyone, welcome to another Horse Geeks podcast where we talk about horses and riding from the inside out. And with me today is Deb Romero, orthopedic massage therapist and certified Alexander Technique instructor. I'm Kirsten Nelson, professional horse trainer and developer of Training for Optimal Balance. So today's topic is balance. And maybe even going back a bit about how that became the best working description of what I work on with horses and riders. And you and I have talked about optimal before because your business is optimal posture. But optimal and balance, sort of want to define what those two things, how they're different, optimal balance versus just balance. And how balance, just the concept of thinking in terms of balance, affects us internally all the time. Mm-hmm. It can become a very effective strategy at coping with stress in our lives and finding ease, finding more enjoyment. So that is today's topic. And I think what I'd like to start off with is I just looked up some general definitions of balance to see, because I'm so mired in it. I just wanted to go, okay, if I just looked it up in the dictionary,
Google it.
Balance is both in the dictionary, a noun and a verb. Mm-hmm. Right. And basically as a noun, it describes a point of equilibrium or stability between forces. So what's interesting is just the word balance already brings in and factors in that we're going to have opposing forces.
Yes.
So you can't really balance in isolation.
No.
Right. And there we could talk about internal forces and external forces, but balance is, as a noun, a place or a point of stability, equalizing forces that are always at play.
Yes.
And as a verb, it was described in the dictionary as to keep or put something in a steady position, offset, counter, or compare values.
Wow.
So like even say bookkeeping, right? You balance the books, right? You're offsetting or comparing values when you do bookkeeping. There's a balance in that system. Or whenever we're considering a big decision in our lives, everybody tells us, just write down a list of pros and cons, right?
I've done that.
Yeah.
And but that doesn't take into account emotional input.
It can. Because what I started to realize, like, of course, like everybody else, I first thought of balance. It was my first big shift from looking at what we do with horses into what's happening on the inside with horses and riders. Because balance, we sort of think of a body balancing. And the more I played with the concept of balance, the more I realized there's not only internal physical forces, forces of motion and forces of nature, close forces like friction and far away forces like, you know, gravity. And I also realized, wow, what we experience that we call emotions are very tangible forces.
Yes.
Right. The same thing even with thoughts, like that list of pros and cons as we're trying to sort something out. We could put in the emotional factors. And as we're thinking through it, what we're looking for is to stabilize our thinking as we make a decision, because change is scary and change is disruptive. So we're looking in that list of pros and cons, we're trying to find that balance. And we're considering all of these factors or forces. Right? And as we talked about with Newton's third law of motion, force always comes in pairs.
Right.
That are equal in magnitude, but opposing in direction. But forces can be mental, emotional, excuse me, sorry, mental, emotional, or physical. They can be internal or external. So all of a sudden, like, you could get into the detail of any specific opposing force, two sides of one force in opposing directions. But in a general way, I went, like my judgments of right and wrong or good and bad started to just dissipate. Like the pressure came off of me personally as I considered things from the point of view of balance and imbalance. So rather than right or wrong, good or bad, I'm progressing or failing, these sort of dualities that we have in our lives that cause a tremendous amount of stress, mm-hmm. I would go, okay, where am I? If I think of what I'm experiencing now, and I call it a problem. So the problem started to translate into, I either have too much of something or I have too little of it, right? So if I have too much, I can move in the direction of reducing that thing I have too much of. And if I have too little, I can move in the direction of increasing that thing. Right? So too much and too little, again, these are really broad general ideas about balance. But I think when people describe balance, what I always found fascinating is people describe it in paradoxes.
Yes.
And that's how I know that they feel balance. Like when I'm working with a horse and rider, when the horse starts to come into balance, it's always the way people describe it is it's smooth, but it's springy, right? So we don't think of springy and smooth going together. Or they'll say it's calm and controlled, but extremely powerful. And again, we don't think of those two things going together, but those are very good descriptions of balance, because balance is where we integrate opposing forces.
Right. Yeah, I like that. And that all of those words, you would think they would contradict each other, but when you find that balance, they don't, because everything's available to you if you're in balance.
Yeah, I like that word, available.
Yeah. Yeah, everything, the choices are there. Sometimes I think we forget we have choices to balance or not balance.
Very much a choice. Very much a choice. And even if it's a small direction, or for a long time, I couldn't understand, but it kept happening. I would solve one problem with a horse, like a horse that was running away. Right. And it was, you know, it took a lot of bit pressure to stop, and they were constantly anxious. And as they would go through training, they would suddenly have the opposite problem. They wouldn't go forward. They were stopping all the time. I couldn't even get a rein contact without them stopping, right? And I go, oh my God, I've ruined this horse, right?
Oh my God, I didn't do it right.
Right. And what I finally realized after many years of beating myself up and seeing it happen over and over is I went, oh, we have to experience the opposite side of a problem before we can find balance. So mistakes suddenly took on a whole new meaning, and problems took on a whole new meaning, because I go, if I have a horse that's way too fast, that horse has to go all the way to the other side, like tip the teeter-totter into not wanting to go forward before they can find the middle.
Yeah. And people do the same thing. People that come in that I work with, let's just use general terms, are too tense. They usually have to go to the opposite end of the spectrum and be slump and relaxed to know what the other extreme is until they can find something in between.
Yes. Yeah. And I think our brain screams how wrong that is, because it's so new and unfamiliar, right? But I love the thinking of balance as a temporary point of stillness, or static equilibrium between dualistic, what we call problems.
Mm-hmm.
So the problem we have actually shows us the way we need to find balance.
Right.
And that doesn't mean, like, say, for example, the horse that goes too fast, it doesn't mean I'm going to fight to slow them down until they like it. What often happens is I don't fight the impulse to run away. Now, if I feel safe riding that horse, I can do it under saddle. And if I don't feel safe riding that horse, I can just put them on a lunge line. And as long as it's safe physically, if they're not going to hurt themselves or go lame, I go, knock yourself out, run away and run away and run away as long as you feel like it. And then I would see those same horses without fighting the desire of that imbalance. They finally come to a point and it feels, you know, we think it's going to take forever. It takes about 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the horse is tired. And the horse has spent the anxiety energy. And so they suddenly choose to actually stop and look at you.
What was I thinking?
Right. Or they go, make it stop. So they'll stop, right? So they'll go from blasting away to either coming in at you to get you to stop, or they'll just stop. And I go, ah, there's our first pendulum swing to the other side. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean we're done. So then I ask for forward again, and they run away or they go too fast, but with less energy, less intensity than the time before. And then they suddenly slam on the brakes and I go, there's my swing. Right?
I think that's the important part. The key is allowing, and the same thing with people, not to try to fix it in the sense, but to help them sort it out themselves.
Right.
To and find their own balance, what that means to them, because my ideals of balance may not be the same as somebody else's.
Exactly. It's a unique, deeply personal experience. What we do share that's in common is balance feels good to everybody.
Yes.
Right. And what we fight all the time is trying to fix a problem by controlling it. Right. And when we don't control it and we just curiously start to explore the other side, or we expect a big pendulum swing to the other side for the sake of information, right? If this horse is trapped in a habit of running away and the rider sort of keeping it under control with bit leverage, that horse has never felt the consequences of the decision.
That's a good point.
And so yeah. I go, if I don't judge it as bad, and I go, whatever internal need you have to go that fast for that long, have at it. Like, I'm going to make sure it's a safe situation for you, but I'm not going to tell you that's a bad choice. I'm just going to look for that choice to either hit a saturation point or it just kind of quits working at that extreme and look for the body or the mind to make a new choice. And sometimes with horses, the choice is always the opposite side of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
The opposite side. And with humans, I think, like you're describing, you have to give people a space the same way where it's safe to go, you could completely slump and let go of every muscle in your body for the sake of information.
Exactly. It's a choice. You can choose that.
Yes.
That's a choice. It's not right or wrong. It's just a choice.
Right. And there's a benefit in understanding more options rather than think we have to fix the problem and control the problem that we have. Sometimes we just go, okay, I have no idea why I have this problem. Let's explore it a little further. And then I think out of that, the balance starts to reveal itself. More than we make it happen.
Yeah. I had a story around that. I had a thoroughbred off the track And I was one of those very controlling, put him in a frame, you got to do it this way. And that horse would buck me off
every time. Regularly.
He's in the show ring every time. And then my friend, who was much more laid back and kind of just let him do his own thing, she'd win everything on him. Just, yes. Just goes to show. I didn't make very good choices.
No, and a lot of the problems that we say we have with horses are really the horse showing us this isn't working for me.
Exactly.
You know, you have to make an adjustment here to meet me halfway. And they don't apologize about it. They're not like dogs with just unending love, no matter what you do. You know, and cats that love you when they feel like it and walk away when they feel like it. It's like horses have a way of really making us step up to the plate. Sure. If we want to earn their cooperation and affection. And in thinking in terms of balance took away a ton of frustration with horses, because I quit looking at problems as unsolvable because they were hard to control.
Oh, say that again. That's important.
I quit looking with the concept of balance. Problems, like we think problems feel overwhelming to us because we feel we can't control them and change them.
Right.
If we look at a problem as an imbalance, then we give up the judgment of it or the value judgment, and we quit trying to control it and begin to ask better questions in our mind. How could I shift this to the opposite, if not yet the ideal?
Right. And the opposite and the ideal, that's important, those two words, because they're not the same.
Right. Which reminds me, that's one of the things I was going to talk about was balance. We can talk about as just not falling over, not falling off. It's an essential stability in the context of changing forces. And those forces never go away. So a first step of balance is just to think of equalizing opposing forces, not making one side good and one side bad, right? Optimal balance is thinking of the highest potential, the best use of body and mind or maneuver or situation would be a more nuanced version of balance, more subtle, with sort of a higher state of body and mind. But balance, like even if we talk about, like one of the things that always fascinated me with high level athletes is what we call being in the zone. Mm-hmm. So some research I did on the parasympathetic and the sympathetic nervous system were not that they're on and off like light switches, but that our bodies use the sympathetic nervous system, which is fight and flight nervous system. It adjusts our entire autonomic nervous system. So it affects, mm-hmm. you know, heart rate, digestion, circulation, all of that. And the parasympathetic nervous system is our rest and digest nervous system, which again affects the autonomic nervous system in very specific ways. So when we deal with fear, we're in the sympathetic. And when we're learning, it's best to be in the parasympathetic. But those two nervous systems don't entirely switch on and off. They act more like a faucet that has hot and cold running water. So one could be the primary mode of operation while the other is sort of functioning in the background. So one can be dominant over the other, but they're always both functioning, right? But when we equalize them, when we balance them, it's the experience that we call being in the zone.
Yes.
And so being in the zone, we're in this conscious control and awareness, and we feel safe. But our body is under stress. So our fight and flight nervous system is helping our body feel like it's on autopilot. We feel very mentally focused and we are in control. That's our parasympathetic nervous system. But our body is just sort of feeling like it's on autopilot. We're not having to control every step or put effort into the athletic endeavor that we've practiced. That's our sympathetic nervous system. So when they equalize and we feel that balance, it's very hard to describe. And again, it's always described as a paradox. And that's the integration, the physical integration of both nervous systems, which is how we can think during high performance and high positive stress, when we put positive stress on our body or the horse's body.
Yeah, that's a, there's a term in the Alexander world called thinking in activity.
Yes, and so that describes...
That's you're describing that exact thing, that are we making that choice to think in the activity?
Right, right. Where fear, if fear is dominant, we can't try to control fear in ourselves or the horse. I go, and as long as that sympathetic nervous system is dominating the parasympathetic, we can't find balance.
Right. It, all those other things, like being curious, asking questions, all that goes out the window if you're, you know, living in that fear state.
Right. And understanding balance, it changes our moment-to-moment decisions, sort of like how many years have you gone on trail rides with people and the horse spooks at that burned out black stump, right? And the horse has a fear reaction, which means all of a sudden the sympathetic nervous system dominates. The horse goes into instinct. And so what do people do? What's your experience?
Grab something.
Well,
clench,
yes.
Shorten clench, muscles.
Grab. Yes, because
grab
that
the
triggers.
Grip with your legs.
It triggers our fear reaction, our instinct,
yes,
as well. Absolutely. But then what we're told to do, which kind of almost goes against our intuition, it only makes sense to people, not horses, is we push the horse to go touch and see and smell whatever it's afraid of. Thinking that if we push the horse in the direction of the fearful object, they're going to get over it.
Yes.
And I more often than not, I see that end in disaster rather than something successful.
I'm definitely going to come off if I do that.
Yeah. Or we learn humility over the years.
The forces of motion are going to go the opposite direction of me.
Yes. So if we take that same scenario, but we're considering any problem as an imbalance, I go, okay, that horse just tipped the teeter-totter over to the side of fear and fight and flight. So to really restore balance, I need to take action to restore the nervous system, not take the horse to the black stump. I go, that might be the end result, but I'm not going to get there as long as I keep pushing that side of the teeter-totter down towards instinct and fear and anxiety and tension and everything related to the sympathetic nervous system. I go, good luck.
Yeah, I had an experience like that yesterday. My big mare, Callie, which her nickname used to be Airs Above the Ground, because that's usually where she spent most of her time. It was a windy day. They just brought in a new horse across the road. The vet was here and I wanted to ride. So I went to get on and I approached the mounting block and she starts snorting. So the old me goes, just get on. Just get on.
Yeah. Don't let her know you're afraid, but just get on. Yeah.
So I started to think, well, could I just wait a little while and see what happens? So I just stood on the mounting block for a while and she just ramped it up and ramped it up and ramped it up. And I went, not getting on that.
Yeah.
So we just walked around for about 5 minutes. I thought, well, what could I do to help her figure this out? So we just walked around the paddock and in about 5 minutes, I was able to get on. So
yeah, she just needed that moment to restore balance.
Yes.
And when we push through problems is where we get in trouble. We think that we have the mental capacity to outthink the reality of emotions.
That's a good one, Kirsten.
We don't. And neither
does 1,700 pounds worth. Thank you very much.
Exactly. Or we think we have the mental capacity and understanding to make this incredibly complex coordination of the body balance. And I go, not a chance. Mm-mm. Like, that's a discovery in each unique body, is how to better and better coordinate ourselves and balance internally to find optimal use of our body. And that's a journey of discovery. It's not a journey of giving the right aids, doing the right maneuvers. All of that tips the scale away from balance, or it puts us kind of at one end of the teeter-totter or the other.
And we stay there sometimes. So yeah.
We can get very stuck there.
Yeah.
And I even thought in terms, as I was kind of preparing, I went, you know, even ambition is an interesting thing to consider about how we balance, right? And we've seen it in our society where sort of, you know, keeping up with the Joneses can be the driving force of ambition. And what I love about like the younger generation, the millennials, is they're already looking for the idea of a work-life balance, where yes. Older generations were like work, 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 and then retire. So I go, even the ambition we have with our horses, we get into trouble when we just want to get to the show and win. We can be so ambitious that we lose balance and we forget to bring our partner along. We forget what are the needs of the horse, you know, or we forget to relax within the process.
Oh, that's a big one.
And it can become miserable to be overly ambitious. It can be yes. stressful to become overly ambitious. And so sort of like you said, maybe learning to slump or give yourself a window of time where you take time off from competition and you go, I'm just going to reconnect with my horse. Like I'm just going to have no agenda. Maybe that's the counterbalance to living through all this high stress with performance horses.
Yeah. I like what you brought up about what I'm really curious about is, you know, extreme athletes are not just trying to balance their body. They know that there's a mental aspect.
Yes.
To it. And I think they're looking for the least amount of effort.
Absolutely. That's what,
and that's what increases your time. Is the least amount of effort to do right. what you want to do.
Exactly. Because if we just spoke strictly in terms of force, like Newton's third law of motion, we have equal magnitudes and opposing directions. So as those two sides of forces are integrated, all force, when it's equalized, is reduced.
Yes. And that's the paradox you were saying about the language that people come up with when they feel it, when they feel like they're in the zone or balanced or whatever words you want to use.
Yes.
Powerful, but it's easy. And, you know, all those words wrapped into one. I think it's because the body realizes it's reaching closer to optimum use. And availability of use too.
And all horses, all riders recognize it. And when I'm having a verbal conversation with a rider, whether it's about their balance or the horse's balance, I wait to hear. And it's unique how everybody says it. Some people use metaphors. Some people can't quite put their finger on it. Mm-hmm. And I go, just spit it out. It's going to feel like nonsense, but just yep. try your best to describe what you're sensing. And it always, I wait for it to come out as a paradox. That's how I kind of know that they've integrated that experience of balance, is because whatever they use to describe it, there's always a paradox in there somewhere, because that's what balance feels like.
Yeah.
We're describing an integration of opposites.
Yes. And that it's all available. I think that's the aha for me, is that that feeling of balance to me is the availability to do anything.
Yes.
that.
Yeah, and the extremes, it can be in extreme or it can be minimal. Like you could think of it as a balance as the fulcrum of a teeter-totter of any plane of forces that has two ends and a fulcrum. And we can be out on the outer edges where we feel the most amount of force. Those would be extreme. We could be kind of medium, kind of where we might sit on a teeter-totter or a little bit closer to the fulcrum, and the forces don't feel as overwhelming because the magnitude goes down. Or we could be standing in the middle of the teeter-totter, which I used to like to do, and balance both sides with little minimal adjustments of force. So the closer we get to balance, the sort of extremes reduce.
Yes.
Even though we might be going back and forth.
Yes.
And extreme is hard. Like I had an experience. I went and did the clinic in Maryland. And while I was gone this past weekend, my horse colicked. So my horse Prima, who I have owned since she was born, is 28 years old, Arabian mare. And I get this call that she's colicking and I'm out of town. And so the vet was there within an hour, and probably another 4 hours from that, she was at the clinic because the colic wasn't resolving with the vet on site. And then by that evening, I was getting a call that she's still not getting better, and can they take her into surgery?
Ugh, wow.
And it's extreme. But I think this is what I've learned from horses so importantly, was even in the middle of that extreme, I was able to really take some pause to make a better decision. And what I was balancing in my mind was love and fear. I love this horse. She's like my child. We've been together 28 years. She's taught me more than any human ever possibly could about horses, and just is so near and dear to my heart. So on that side, I have this deep love for this horse. On the other side, my brain is going cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. Oh my God. My horse theoretically was never a surgical candidate, because I mean, now we're just thousands and thousands of dollars, and she's 28 years old. How is she going to get through the anesthesia? What kind of surgery is it going to be? Could she recover from the surgery at this age? So all of that was on the fear side of the scale. You know, the amount it was going to cost, how long she'd be in the hospital, how could she recover, what's really going on. And then on the other side, I have this deep love.
Yeah.
And I had to sit there with myself going, how do I balance this love and fear? Love and fear. And as I go, I'm not 100% sure how I'm going to pay for it all, but I went, at the end of the day, my money is here to pay for the things I love and take care of those that I love. And that's what finally, when I balanced it out, I go, you'll find a way because you love this horse so dearly.
And that's that process that you just described is, you know, what we all go through.
Absolutely.
And it's almost like we use logic, fear, anger. I mean, we go through the gamut.
Yes.
It's like we have to hit every button.
Yes.
And make a decision. And see, those are the choices. And that's what balance is too. We make choices.
Yes.
On
and when it
mental, came, physical balance.
When it came right down to it, and they said, we either have to push her harder medically, which means there will be a point where she will no longer be capable of having surgery.
Right.
Or here's our surgical window right here. What do you want to do? And, you know, theoretically, I go, it doesn't make any sense to spend that much money on a 28-year-old horse. But when it came right down to it, I was like, oh, hell no. You do what you need to do.
You can figure out the rest later.
And luckily, I had some private space, and I literally sat there and could feel the forces at play. Particularly, I felt it in my heart, between love and fear and love and fear. And as I let myself bounce back and forth, I could finally come to a place where the thought was, I love this horse, and there's nothing more important than taking care of the ones we love. And on the fear side of it, I know she's strong for her age. She's in great shape. And I have the capacity to pay for this, even if it's a little uncomfortable. So I went, it sort of teetered down to those two thoughts of integrating, trusting that she was strong enough and that I have the resources, and really knowing there's nothing more important than the ones you love.
Right.
Whether it's a horse or a dog or a cat or a hamster or your husband or your kids. I go, I
like
your
the
difference.
Way you explained it, because it seems like you were the teeter totter, you know, you were way out here and then you were way over here and you just kept marching towards the middle.
Yes.
And then you found this manageable place. Like, okay, now I can manage this balance.
Yeah. And I literally like laid on a heating pad, put a cold cloth on my head and felt it. Like, I think before thinking about balance, I would have been either super stressed out, you know, or trying to be in control or feeling like I had no control, because with health, we all lose control when it comes to health and dying, we all lose control. And so sort of everything I've learned from horses was wrapped up into that experience of going, can you do this for yourself? And it was huge. It was as big as falling off a horse. It had that much internal impact on me, right? And that's what an emotional balance is, mental, emotional. And I had to physically sit there and be gentle with myself and a hot cup of tea and just like, but I could feel that tug of war very much in my chest and in my heart, and finding my way to balance. I'm like, okay, you know this, so let's work on it. And it was amazing that I ended up getting through the whole clinic weekend, being able to focus on what I was doing and teaching. And I knew she was in good hands at the clinic, getting good update, getting twice a day updates on how she's doing. And so I was able to find that balance in order to function through the rest of the clinic. And an update is she's doing great post-surgery. And it was a surgical necessity. She would not have come through it without surgery. So I did make the right decision. She had fatty benign tumors called lipomas, and they had to be removed. So she is recovering. She's doing wonderfully. She's coming home in a few days if all continues well. So it's a very happy ending. It could have not been a happy ending, but there's certain things like they don't know until they open them up surgically. So if she had had what's called a strangulating lipoma, where she had cut off circulation to the intestines where you get necrotic tissue and they have to do a resectioning, that recovery at her age would not have been possible.
That's not high percentage of that.
And we just didn't know until I gave the okay to take her into surgery.
And that brings back, you know, when you're looking for balance, you have to still have curiosity, adventure, and you have to have the self-confidence to explore.
Yes.
So you are exploring all the possibilities. And I think that's the important thing about seeking balance, is exploring all your choices. And that it's not one way, it's not judgmental, it's none of that. There's a whole big round thing to look at.
And until I could get to the place where I could balance the fear and the love, I couldn't really make a decision. I was foggy, it wasn't clear, I wasn't sure what to do. But the more I could balance those two forces between love and fear, the sooner I sort of got clear.
And I'm wondering also, just from an Alexander perspective, do we need outside help? Like, they gave you parameters, like, this is the window of opportunity. So that probably helped you make a choice of which direction to go. You know, all it's like, I think we've talked, we always, if we're seeking optimal balance, we're always with teachers, you know, we're learning, we're always asking the questions. We always either have somebody on the ground or, you know, hands-on from an Alexander teacher, because we're always wanting that optimal that we seek.
Yes. And part of by finding my emotional balance, which brought me more mental clarity, I was able to have better discussions with my vet here, with the vets at the clinic. I was able to set parameters saying, okay, let's open her up. But if it's not a surgery that a 28-year-old horse can easily recover from, we're not doing it. Like there's certain surgeries have very difficult recovery rates and other surgeries don't. And so having the clarity could only come and gathering the information could only be filtered into a clear decision when I started to really just find that emotional balance.
And I think, I don't know if I, until recent years, thought about the emotional, mental aspect of riding.
And the balance. And it's part of life.
Yeah, and how that affects everything we do, especially horses.
It's definitely a lesson that horses cause us to learn, because we're working with prey animal instinct, we're predator instinct. If we don't operate in a place that's beyond instinct, both us and the horse, it's not a super safe relationship. Things go horribly wrong, which is why the insurance rates are so high, right? And why non-horse people think we're crazy. But no, mental, emotional is just as important as physical. And that's a lesson I really learned from working with horses, especially, you know, kind of horses that were on their last chance training wise. But it has integrated into my life. And really, it showed me at this moment with my mare having to go in for surgery. It's like, okay, let's, you know, can you walk the walk? Can you talk the talk? Can you walk the walk? How do you integrate this? And I think 10 years ago, I would have been sitting in a corner with a bottle of wine and would have lost 6 days from just stress. I would have been non-functional.
Just living in the muck.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that was what I knew
at
the time.
It happens.
It was my best answer at the time, but it was such a powerful learning moment for me to go, horses and life, it's all pretty much the same thing. Balance is a concept. Balance is a way of looking at problems and stress. And I went, the universe just handed me a big fat one to go.
So here, try this.
And it really made me think, no, I'm just way out here on the edge where the forces are great in magnitude and extreme. And I'm going to work my way towards that fulcrum. And I was able to manage it and function and continue to function and just not let it feel so bad.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It kind of eats you from the inside out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
And it's like letting our minds kind of spin that direction. I could have gone either direction into severe imbalance, and really, it just creates more stress for us, not anybody else. It's a bad feeling to live with when we do it that way. So thinking of balance as a concept and problems as an imbalance, because knowing that the love I felt had to be balanced with some practicalities that I was fearful about, it was like, I went, okay, my heart says do this because I love her so much. And then my brain says do that because of reality check, right? and how do I integrate those two things?
I think that's a good point to bring up about, because I hear it a lot in my age group. I'm mid-60s, is balancing the feeling of fear with riding.
Mm. And they show up because they love it. But as we age, our balance is directly challenged every year we age. It becomes more challenging to balance or maintain balance as we age, because we don't get away with all the little compensation patterns we used to get away
with
when we were young and strong and had more energy.
Could push through it.
Yeah. So I think balance becomes more important as we age.
I agree. Yeah. And that adaptability to be curious, to look for choices for balance.
Yes.
And not think it's a hard line that needs to be drawn.
Yeah.
You have to do the seesaw thing. You have to weigh things for a while until you find what works for you.
Exactly. Exactly.
Or your horse.
Exactly. And even if we look at like our whole societal environment with vaccines and politics and blah, 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 I go, ooh, I'm kind of happy to be quarantined at home. All of that stuff. It's just scary out there. Because I look at it now and I go, these are just big swings that
big
are necessary.
Swings.
A necessary part of balancing our social environment or our society is these big swings are necessary, but they don't feel very good.
Right.
They don't feel very good. So I go, I'm just going to go ride my horse until it's all figured out.
Going to just hide on my little farm and nobody will know where I am.
Yeah. Or making that choice every day to learn from my horse about balance has really helped me deal with other life challenges and situations.
Yeah. I like that, because I think I've gone from a rider that was that controlling, it's done this way, this is how you do it, and having poor outcomes, to being curious enough to ask questions like, well, what could we do today to help you with what you've got going on, instead of always thinking there's a right and a wrong.
Yeah. Or realizing the scale is just tipped too far one way, and we actually have to look in the opposite direction.
Run the other way.
The other way. Yeah. Or like opening up that the problem shows us the imbalance, and we look in that, we don't have to force to get to the other side, but we look to the other side to find the solution.
Right. And to me, it's the asking the questions and being curious, you know, well, what about this? Does this work? Is this working? No. Okay. Try this. And, right. And in balance, the same thing doesn't necessarily work all the time.
Exactly. Because forces are always changing. They're
right.
Never static.
You
Life
may not,
is changing.
The answer might be different. The
yeah.
Questions need to be different. So always being curious about, well, what, where do I go to improve? What's the clearest path for this moment?
Right. Right. Because bodies are constantly in motion. The planet's in motion. Everything's in motion. And balance is only a temporary point. So you always have these forces at play, forces always coming in pairs. And we can think general or we can think specific. It doesn't matter. But sort of navigating between dualities, dual mm-hmm. problems, tell us how to find balance, ironically.
Yes.
So I think too, what was that paper you sent me? I think I want to talk about that next time to take another look at balance. The paper was W.H.M. Carrington.
Yeah, balance as a function of intelligence. So the thought of thinking in activity.
Thinking and activity, or
that's the simple way.
Just that example of what I went through with a big situation with my mare and colic surgery. It's like as a function of intelligence. So I'm going to have a chance to read that paper this week, and then let's discuss it at the next podcast.
Okay.
I think would be fun.
Yes.
All right. So thank you guys for joining us today. please like and share and subscribe if you like the podcast and add comments. We're happy for all the comments or questions. If there's anything between you and your horse that you have questions about, we love new topics of discussion.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks everybody for joining us and have a great day.
Bye. Be kind.